In part two of my conversation with dual Olympic 800-metre gold medalist David Rudisha, he talks about the highs and lows of his athletics career and what's keeping him occupied these days. When you look at your athletic CV, it's really quite mind-blowing. And we've spoken about the fact that you won a gold medal first at London. You were just talking then about being so tired after a race that you were seeing stars and you almost passed out. I mean, for you, after that race in London, how did you feel?
You know, before London, it was a good year, of course. Because I was already a world record holder from 2010, and of course the reigning world champion in 2011 in Daegu. So going there, there was a lot of pressure, of course, because I was the favorite, and everyone was expecting me to win gold. But I know it was not easy, because if you go back to history, Sepko used to hold the world record, and he was very good in 800 than most people even think of, his 1500 meters. He didn't win during his career the gold in 800 meters, but he won gold in 1500 meters. The same as my former world record holder, Wilson Kipketer. He won so many world championship titles, but he never won an Olympic gold. And there was a time we were in Monaco, Athlete of the Year gala, and we were like four of us sitting on the table: Wilson, Sepko, one trainer, and myself. And there was one journalist who asked, David, do you think in 2012 you'll defend your title? You will win Olympics. And they asked the others, do you think David will win? Because you guys never won an Olympic during your time, and you old world record at some point. And they were like, they didn't answer. Some of them didn't answer. They said, I think David is here. In 2012, he's going to answer that question. And that was really special, and something that I used to keep on reminding myself. And wow, all these guys, they just say, "Now that question just passed. You know, David is here. I think he's going to answer that." Like, it was because they were asking, "Is it a norm that the best athletes, the world record holder, don't win Olympic? Is it because of too much pressure?" But almost they all said, David will answer that in 2012. And I felt like, wow, these guys, they really believe in me. And wow, if they believe that I can do that, I can achieve, then let me keep on focusing. And I believe it is achievable.
And indeed it was, and was, I think, is it still not the fastest 800-metre race of all time, including all the competitors?
Yes, is. It was one of it's still the best 800 meters race, because almost everybody, most of the runners that night ran their personal best, national record, world junior record, and most of them ran their first time in terms of their placing, in terms of order. No one has ever run 141 and become second. No one has ever run that fast, 42 something, and become third. So they had almost everybody was rewarded with something at the end.
And for you, David, after that superhuman effort to win that race with a new Olympic and world record, just to come back to my earlier question, I mean, were you seeing stars? Were you so completely exhausted, or did the adrenaline kick in?
I was in one of my best form. I can say, when you're not in good form, or when you go beyond your limit, sometimes you really struggle at the end. You feel like, your body, you have given almost everything. But in London 2012, I was really strong, not like the years before. And I prepared myself very well. And after I finished, I was feeling strong. I was celebrating. You can see, you know, jumping up and down. Yes, it was a tough race. Of course, I gave my best, but even after that, I was able to celebrate and even go for the lap of, you know, honor. And it was really great. But it's because of the preparation that I had that year. I was very strong. I ran some. I ran 2:41 before the Olympics that year.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, David, your lead up to the Rio Olympics in 2016 was not quite so smooth, was it?
Yes. After 2012, I had a disappointment with injuries. You know, I got some problem with my right knee, whereby I had a keyhole surgery, and after that, I wasn't really, feeling so great, especially in most of my training, because training is also not easy. You know, sometimes you have to endure a certain level of pain in terms of training, and having also another pain feeling on my knee, it was like double pain, double tragedy. So it was quite a difficult moment, you know, coming back after that surgery. In 2014, I also went to Glasgow, you know, called the Commonwealth Games,
mm-hmm.
and I was second because I couldn't really find, you know, the speed that I used to, you know, I couldn't really train way back because I lost so much of my muscle on my calf and also my thigh
mm-hmm.
after the surgery. And getting that into place took me a lot of time. I had even to go for a rehabilitation in Germany for almost 2 months. So coming back, it was not as business as usual. I had to take step by step again, building up slowly. But I was glad because I was able to defend my title, to win again after, you know, I missed in 2013 because of that injury. I couldn't defend my world championship title in Moscow. So coming in 2015, I was able to win again in Beijing, which was a great boost. And it was like, everywhere in the world now, Rudisha is back. And although I wasn't at my full, you know, fitness, I was glad that I was able to hold on and even win again and defend my title in 2016 Rio. Even though I was going there not as the favorite, you know, according to so many other media and media analysts and journalists who have been covering sports, you know, they were like, yes, Rudisha don't look very good, because that year I lost almost 4-3 Diamond League races. So I was in at the top. But I was glad just toward the end, my body was responding very well. I was able to do some of my good training that I used to do before. And to run that 1:42 in the Olympic, it was also a very good competition and also a very good time. I think that is also the second fastest time to be run and to be for someone to want to win an Olympic gold. So I think I have two fastest time of winning Olympics.
Do you know, David, it's interesting when you're sitting here and you're saying that, it kind of rolls off the tongue, but what you've achieved is incredible. I mean, what drove you to that level of success?
You know, it's all about passion, you know, when you love what you're doing. And, of course, when you get there, you know, when you get into sport, and of course you come into highlight, you know, you cannot run from that. And every other time, every year, there are also you know, a lot of people who expect and to see you progressing and doing the best, you know, improving from where you are. And that has also been a bit of a challenge, you know. Having pressure from outside is one of the things that also help us to push us, you know, to move forward. And of course, running was something that I loved doing it right from when I was young. It's something I felt like, yes, this is where I belong. And, you know, anything to do with athletics and running was, you know, like becoming like my daily life. And, of course, it's not easy, it's full of challenges, you know, going into surgeries and so on and coming back strongly, focusing, you know, feeling and, you know, enduring the pain in training and so on. It's not easy. Going for rehabilitation in Europe and being patient, it's quite a journey. And I think that is one of the things that I feel like, yes, it's true that I truly love sports. And maybe if I was somebody else, maybe I could have given up a long time ago.
That's what I was wondering, because presumably there were times where you thought maybe you should give up.
After I had that knee problem, and even I lost some of my muscle, you know, my calf muscle and thigh, it was like, how can I compete with this kind of indifferent with one leg losing? And I can't really feel like I have so much strength on the one leg. So it was quite challenging. And you know, I had hope. And of course, you know, the family also supported me a lot. And my coach also was very close. And it was not fast, my first injury. In 2008, actually, I was to try a Kenyan trial for the Olympics. And I got a small problem with my calf, with my Achilles tendon in Ostrava, just before the Kenyan trial. And I was advised not by the doctor not to compete, otherwise I might risk hurting my leg more. So I was out of the trials. And it was tough for me because that is a year, of course, I was young and I was looking forward into, you know, these major championships. And it was quite a challenge because I had also to stay for some time. And coming back in 2009, I was not also doing very well because I was still undergoing some kind of pain in my leg, in my Achilles. But I was able to manage. Going back, it was not easy, it's tough because that is a time people, of course, and the media, they were saying, maybe Rudisha is not a championship runner. Maybe it's just a fast runner because that year also I went on, and after that I broke the Africa record, which had stood for 23 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
142.01. Well, you've certainly proven people wrong. David, before we get on to talking about some of the things that you're doing these days, I just want to go back to the Rio Olympics and to the fact you managed to win back-to-back gold medals. Now, what was your mindset? What was your mental preparation as you were going into that event? Because clearly there must be something about you that distinguishes you from so many other 800-metre runners.
I went there, of course, as one of the favorites, as a defending champion in Rio. So it was not quite that easy for me because that year I didn't run so great. I lost almost 3-4 races in the Diamond League circuit. And in Kenyan trial, I also came third. So two Kenyans were ahead of me in Kenyan trial. And when I... after the training and everything, of course, nobody really believed that I was the David Rudisha that they knew me before. They said maybe he's not as strong as he was. But mentally, I was really strong and I was quite right there. Of course, I understand that in any championship, nothing is guaranteed. You know, and I know even some of the favorites who have gone to some major championship, but some of them even don't win. So I said, yes, I know it will take a lot, and I just crossed my finger that everything goes well, because I knew, yes, I can do it. I can do it. I believed in myself. I can do it. And the last training that I had in Kenyan training camp before we went to Rio, I felt so confident. I felt so confident. In fact, I felt like I have this. I have this. And going there, when I told even some of my compatriots that I am going to run from the front, they couldn't believe me. So one of them decided to go crazy the first lap. Like, crazy. And after 200 is when I realized, yes, this is not as planned as we planned, because I told him I'm strong and I'm going to run a fast race. And believe me, I'm not lying. So he decided to take off very fast. He ran like almost 23, the first 200, which was extremely fast for 800. And 400, he was like crossing even like faster than even the world record pace. And yes, I decided to slow back a little bit after the first 200. And going forth, yes, I deploy my second tactic, plan B. And that really worked for me, because I started to go as I planned. I know 800 very well. I have my rhythm. So I just decided to cope up with my rhythm. And after 300, he was just there. He was starting to get fatigue. And we just went past him smoothly. And he didn't run a good race. And he was a Kenyan champion. And I feel pity for him, because he was in pretty good shape. And if he could have listened to my advice, he could have done even better than that. Maybe even he could have been in the podium that year, in Rio Olympics. But I was glad that I was able to defend, despite the fact that nobody believed that I was in that kind of a form. But, you know, sometimes it takes a lot of courage even to not listen to sometimes the outside world, and because that is also can be a distraction. And sometimes you get so much advices like, go run like this, do that, do that. But sometimes you have to listen to your inner person, you know, and feel what your body is telling you. And in athletics, I think that is very important, because that is the real thing, you know. So when you listen to your body, you listen to yourself sometimes, it's hard to lie. You know, it can tell you the truth.
It sounds like you've been incredibly in tune with your body throughout your career. Now, I just wanted to talk about the fact that in both the Olympic finals that you won, 2012 and 2016, of the eight runners, there were two Kenyans in each race. Now, that really says a lot about the level of talent here. So, I mean, I know that in Iten you've been you were training at altitude, but what else is it about Kenyans that makes you just so incredibly dominant in middle and longer distance running?
I can say that you know, Kenyan, unlike any other country, we have so many athletes actually, and most of them are being, you know, motivated from the people around them. They, you know, like we have world champions around us. Like if you wake up today in Eldoret town, if you walk on the street, you know, definitely you get to meet 1, 2, 3, 4 athletes who are Olympic champions or maybe world champion and so on. And these people and these athletes also, they are, you know, they become role model in their villages, you know. And, you know, young kids, they like imitating. Like if somebody is living just across the road, if he did that and he was used to do this, he used to train, then definitely I can try. I can also do, you know, my time. I'll wait for my time. I'll train like him. And, of course, if I can get some motivation from him, then I can try my luck. And you find that, you know, when you have like 100, to say, let's say 10,000, 20,000 of Kenyan training, definitely some of them who are the best, who have the best talent, who get the best training, get to succeed and get to the world stage. I can say, like, for Kenyan athletes who are succeeding to the international level, it is just about like 10 to 15%. But there are some of them who have been training, and some of them never really reach the top level. So it's very competitive.
Do you know, David, I am Australian. I can't think of one place in Australia like Eldoret where you could walk down the street and go, oh, look at all those gold medalists. I mean, it's really, I guess the Rift Valley is considered the breeding ground, isn't it, for all of your incredible, you know, international athletes. Now, yeah, I know that for you, David, you've experienced a lot of highs professionally, but also some lows. And after the Rio Olympics, you were involved in a head-on collision with a bus. And then last year you were in a plane crash. So how many lives do you have? And what impact did that have on you and any plans you might have had to continue your athletics career?
Well, yes, I can say that those are kind of challenges, but wow, that one was really tough, you know. On the eve of 24th of August 2019, I left, you know, in the evening, I left Nairobi. I was going back home to Kilgoris, that is where my home. And after about 5 hours of drive, I was alone in the car. After 5 hours, I was just about 30-40 minutes to get home. So, yeah, I was around Keroka near Kisii, and I was going up the hill, driving through sharp corners. And it was such a horrific, you know, moment, because all of a sudden, this bus was coming down. It was a passenger bus going to Nairobi.
Mm.
Oof, yeah, it just came down, you know, occupying my line, and it was on a sharp corner, and it just happened very quick, and it was really tough. And yeah, I can say is I'm lucky, you know, I was lucky.
I saw the picture of the vehicle after the crash that you posted on social media. It's just incredible that you managed to walk away.
Yeah, you know, most of the people, they just say, like, I'm kind of a lucky person. I'm a lucky person. And, of course, I'm grateful. I'm so grateful, you know, for this life, you know. It's not every day that something like that happen, you know, and you just come out just like that without even any major injuries.
David, a Kenyan runner, Mary Mora, won the 800 metres in Budapest just over a week ago. And you and her have something in common that I've been quite intrigued about. And that is that you are among the elite athletes who have been employed by the National Police Service. And this, as I understand it, is part of a program in Kenya that's been running for a long time, whereby the police service, the prison service and the defence force and other national institutions employ elite athletes so that you've got an income while you're training. So how does that system work, and what are the benefits for the employers?
Well, actually, I must say that the National Police Service, you know, the armed forces and the prison, they have been very interested, you know, in taking young athletes into the forces. And this is really a great, you know, a noble thing, because most of the athletes, you know, they don't have jobs, you know, like permanent jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them also, they're just coming maybe from high school and so on. And, you know, as you may know, that we also have major competition between the National Police Service, you know, the prison and the armed forces. And it's a very great activity. And every team wants to get the best. like National Police Service have been recruiting so many athletes over the years, and so many athletes who have won Kenya medals in championships and in Olympic games come from the police in Kenya.
Mm.
And this is really good, because apart from athletes running outside there, they also get a living, you know, they earn something. And of course, it gives also them protection, you know, they are also, you know, they benefit, you know, from the services from the police. And we are always very proud, because they have also been of great help, you know, in terms of giving athletes, you know, humble time. Also, they train. And definitely, of course, even when you get, for example, an injury, you know, you still have an income. And this is really great. And we are happy, you know, as athletes, because most of the time we have been working with them, they really understand, you know, how the sports work, and they give athletes enough time to train, and they just ask the athletes when they're free or when they need them, and also depending with their flexibility in terms of their training programs.
Mm. Now, David, I met a police officer, and in fact it was through him that I found out about this whole system, because he was telling me that he turned up at the police training college, because apparently you have to do like 3 months of training before you can get a promotion. And he said that as part of the training, they had to do the physical activity virtually every morning. It sounded like a very early start. Now, he told me he turned up at 4 a.m. or something crazy, and you were there doing the physical training. Now, my question for you is, police officers must come in all different shapes and sizes, many of whom are just not really cut out for running. So what was it like for you taking a lot of the police through their paces, if you like?
Well, you know, during the promotional courses, they come in different ages, of course,
right.
And of course, some of them have, you know, different weight, you know, in those levels, because you find that some of them haven't been training actively. And, well, it's quite a process, because, you know, they are not really working to be fit professionally. It's just for the normal fitness, and that is also required, you know, as you know that police service and the police job, it needs also a lot of fitness, because of running up and down at some point or some time, and handling, you know, with civilian is not always very easy. So it is quite interesting, you know, because I think that is one of the toughest training sessions. They always feel like, no. We better go to do, we can do other things, but running, it's always a hill for them.
And, but they must, I mean, some of the police, when they turn up and they see it's you, must be quite shocked.
Yes, because, you know, the instructors always, you know, they have to be fit. And most of the time you find that in one occasion or the other, they take a few athletes who maybe were at a certain, when they are free or they are not actively competing, and they go to the college and be some of the instructor when it comes to physical activities. And it is very encouraging, because if you have somebody like Milka Chemos who is there, you know, if you care to see David Rudisha for a few days here and there, it's really great, and it motivates them.
Yes, well, in fact, so again, this police officer said to me that he found the physical training with you and the other instructors so incredibly beneficial that he wants to go back and is looking forward to his next promotion. So there's a plus. So, I mean, has that been a rewarding experience for you?
Yeah, it's really great, you know, because, you know, in the world you get to meet different people and in different places, and it's always exciting, you know, meeting, you know, young school kids, you know, going to high school, you know, meeting with high school, going to colleges, meeting some corporates, you know, we do some exercises here and there, going to your own job, like meeting with other fellow policemen and doing the same thing. That tells you that sports is widely celebrated event and people love to do these physical activities, and it is good for the mind, it's good for the body.
Mm. So these days, how much exercise are you doing?
Yeah, I reduce a bit after I had a bone fracture because I went through another surgery and I couldn't really put a lot of weight on my foot. But now I'm starting slowly getting back because now I feel my leg is fully healed. So, but I'm just doing now for fitness. I don't think I will come back professionally.
Okay.
But maybe in the future, I might do a master's after 5 years or so, because I'll be over 40 by then.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. Now, we spoke before about how you've spent most of your life at one, you know, extreme end of the fitness spectrum. But David, for the majority of the population who are somewhere else on the spectrum, including people who may not be very active at all, what is your advice for them, for anyone who would like to be fitter but they're really struggling perhaps with motivation, or they just perhaps haven't found the right activity for them? What do you think they should do?
Being active, it is very important. It's not good to be in office seated the whole day or seated in one point. Like, you get out of your home, your house, you get into the car, and after you go to the office, and after that to your car and back home. I don't think it's healthy. You know, our body needs some exercises, even to burn some calories, what we are eating and so forth. And you see that nowadays people are getting so many problems, you know, with blood pressure and sugar and so forth. And if you try to see most of the people who stay active, training, they most of them probably don't get this problem with the pressure or some disease and so on, because through activity, it's not just that it makes you fit, it also, you know, it's helpful in terms of your health and also in terms of your physical ability to do things. You can even do better. And of course, even in your mind, you know, it's also good to go out there, because when you train, you even feel better, you feel good, you even have a good rest when you go back, because your body feels like you have done something and you need to rest.
David, you've obviously travelled a lot internationally. How would you say the general level of fitness in Kenya compares with that in other countries?
Well, I can say in Kenya we are not taking it very seriously. If you can actually wake up tomorrow morning and you go walk around the roads, apart from only areas like Iten, maybe Nyahururu, where you get to find athletes training. But if you walk just around the street in Nairobi or so on, you won't find so many people training. Unlike in Europe, you know, every time in the morning, in the evening, mostly in Western Europe and Western, it was generally Western countries, a lot of people train. Even those who are in old age, even if they cannot run, they can just walk. You know, there is a special way of walking that you can lose calories. Like, this normal walking, but if you walk with a certain pace, it's just like you're walking in, actively. So in Kenya, so many people are not doing that. And I don't know how that can be done so that it can be changed, so that many people can come into sports and do physical activities, because it is very helpful.
David, going forward for you, I understand you're involved with Athletics Kenya. What are you doing with them?
Well, I am an athlete representative. And we are two of us, so we have Milka Chemos, and also she's in the police. Uh-huh. And we also help in making some executive decisions and executive. And of course, we are the voice of the athletes. And we also attend most of the meeting. And whenever we are working, we see what we can do and how we can assist in any way when it comes to athletics and in sports.
Mm. And you're also now the president of the CAA, the Confederation of African Athletics Athletes Commission. That's a mouthful. Now, understand that among the issues that you're looking at is the drain of talent, of running talent from Africa to European and Middle Eastern countries. How big a problem is that?
Well, it is becoming a big challenge, you know, the change of legions. And as Africa, you know, we have so many athletes. We are very talented. And you see that most of them, they are ending up going to Middle East, and some even to Europe and to America and so forth. And then some of them, after they go, they take their seats. Like those who go for studies, for example, sometimes most of them don't come back again to represent Kenya. They prefer staying there and, you know, applying for the new citizenship in that country. And they,
David, is it the lure of money?
Well, I can say that for those who are going to Middle East, I think they are getting paid something. That is what I really understand about that, because you find that most of them, they might be even having brokers in between. So, and where you find there's some interest or brokers, there must be something like money exchange and so on. But it is a big challenge, because, you know, also Africa, we are not considering our athlete or treating them maybe in the best way possible, you know, in terms of support in their training and during the time they...
Really?
For example, when they get problem with injuries and so forth, there's no proper scheme that take care of our athletes. We only, you know, in Africa mostly, an athlete prepare and train for himself with the manager and so forth. Whenever they get any injuries, no state is taking good care of them. So they have to spend or they have to use their money to treat themselves and so forth. And if you see these privileges, if they get elsewhere, somebody easily change their mind. And this is one of the biggest challenges, because also in terms of rewards, you know, our athletes, when they win, like in major championships, most of them sometimes don't get reward like how others are being rewarded outside there.
Mm.
And for those who actually get persuaded by these brokers and so forth, you find that some of them who are still young, they can't make their decision and they decide to do that. But in my own perspective, I feel like it's not a good way, because we feel proud, you know, representing our country. That is where we belong, and we are better here, and do what we can to see that we are making a difference than running away to run for other country, because this is where we belong. And we want to motivate the future so that they can also, take from us. But if we change our legion, you see, it's like betraying your own country, which is not a good thing.
But David, let's say I am consistently the fifth fastest runner, right, in my country. And I know, though, that my times are really good, and that, for example, if I moved somewhere, I would actually have a chance to compete at the Olympics. But I think, okay, if I stay here, I'm never going to make the team, because I'm always never going to be in the top three. I mean, how much is that a factor?
As I said earlier, Kenya have a lot of talent, so many athletes. And I don't know if it is a kind of a belief, because at the end of the day, if you are best, you are the best. And, you know, if you work hard, you will definitely get there.
Mm.
And I can say, even if you go out, at the end of the day, you're going to meet with those best who are representing their country, like in Kenya. If you run away from Kenya or go to represent another country, definitely at the end of the day, you'll meet those Kenyans in that competition. And it is not just about the competition. It is about how you love your sport. Because concluded World Championships. We have a young girl who is Winfred Yavi running the women's steeplechase.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Kenyan. And yes, she won. And at some point, you know, we didn't know whether to celebrate as Kenyans or not.
Which country did she run for?
She ran for Bahrain.
Ah, okay.
We didn't know whether to celebrate or not. But yes, the Kenyan girl became second and third, which was a great achievement. But you see, if that girl decided to stay in Kenya, definitely she's the best. She can still win. You know, if she can win in the World Championship, why not? You know, win the Kenyan trial and go win for his country where he come from. But these are the challenges we have, and it's quite a journey, and I hope one day we'll be able to handle it and overcome it.
Mm. Now, as we wrap up the interview, as I mentioned, I wanted to get your views on a new global initiative that's been launched by the International Olympic Committee and IUCN, the International Union for Conservation, called Sports for Nature. And this is really trying to mobilise sports federations, clubs around the world to do more to protect and restore nature, not just for the benefit of their own athletes, you know, players who are out there competing, but also for the benefit of the broader community. Now, so what would you hope an initiative like this could achieve?
Well, yes, it is true that we are facing a lot of challenges. It always feels good, you know, when you train in the forest. Any athlete will tell you that.
Mm.
At some point, you know, around E10, we used to go for forest run for training for about 1 hour, 2 hours. And it feels really cool, you know, running around inside those canopies, under the canopies, you know. And it's really nice. And, you know, you get also fresh air, you know, so natural. And, you know, when you run it, places like that, there is no much dust, there is nothing, and the quality of the air is really good, and you find that even your performance is much, much better, because athletes also depend on how they breathe, you know. When they breathe clean air, their performance is also good. But you can imagine going running along the road where maybe there's so much emission of from the cars and so on, and or going through where it's very dusty, you know, you can't really do best. But when you run in good environment, you perform even better, you know, for also athletes to be able to compete well, they need good weather, like clean air and so on. And IAAF also have been trying to educate about the climate change. I was lucky. I was there in Stockholm Plus 50 World for the climate change,
mm-hmm.
And it was such a noble conference, you know, to see all the head of state and people from across the world coming to meet just because of climate. And these are issues that we really need to address, because if we don't do it right now, then it is going to affect our future, and the people who are going to suffer most are our children, because we need to really take good care of our environment, because this environment is us, and this environment that we live in affects our daily life.
And David, do you think you bring a particular perspective to that discussion because of the connection between a Maasai and respect for nature?
I've been a patron for an event in Amboseli. It's called Maasai Olympics.
Oh!
Yes. So we started way back in 2012. And we have been doing it like it's a biannual event. So down there in Amboseli, around Kimana Sanctuary, we have been running this organization of trying to educate the Maasai Moran, the young guys, not to kill lions.
Ah.
Because, you know, at some point there were very few lions because sometimes when it gets very dry, you know, the animals, so many animals, they die around that area. And, of course, the wild animals, they go for the herds like cows and sheep and goats. And the community, they get angry and they go for the lions and they kill them. So there was this initiative and we have been doing some event trying to encourage them. And they also initiate a compensation scheme whereby they compensate those people if their herd have been killed by the lions. And we have been organizing that event since 2012. Whereby we engage them in sports and we give them awards in cash and also we give them award in terms of a bull, which is one of the icons, you know, is one of the prestigious, you know, kind of a gift to our community. You know, when somebody gives you a cow, it's something very special.
And so, David, how many people take part in that event?
We have like... five manyatas around Kimana and Amboseli, and it's widely attended, you know, by the locals, of course, even the local leaders, because it's a quite a noble activity around there. So even it's also covered widely by international media and local. Because even if you go to National Geographic, you can find Maasai Olympics. If you can Google, you can find it. And it's something that we feel like it's something we should try to educate our young Morans, because there in the world today there are so many statues of lions than the lion themselves. And this is a pity, and it's something we should also try to see, that to conserve our environment for the future and for people to come after us.
Wonderful. It has been such a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you so much.
Very much welcome. Thank you so much.
You're such a natural talker. I must thank David for his openness and generosity in taking time for this interview, especially so soon after returning to Kenya from the 2023 World Athletics Championships. You've been listening to the Born Active podcast.
3, 2, 1.